to enter the fishing zone.
Well, this is Fish and Frank here, and I got Robert in a chair across from me. We got RJ running the board. It's the whole gang. We're all here. We're going to talk fishing, all about what's coming up, what's going to go on, what did go on, and who knows what else we're going to get into. Fish and Frank's here on WKDW 97.5 FM Real Community Radio, broadcasting out of Northport, Florida, to parts unknown and the universe at large, including Port Charlotte, Venice, Englewood, and our friends in the agricultural areas. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Frank. Or afternoon, I guess we should say.
I suckered you right into it. Gotcha. Okay, I knew I could do it.
There you go. That's good stuff. So you went fishing the other day?
Yes, I did. I went out with Captain Carl, been out with the wife. I found out there's a certain brand, and I'm not going to say the brand of the rod and reel because it's not fair to them that I cannot deal with this. Remember the rod and reel where I broke the tip of the rod, and I laid it on the back of the tonneau cover when I got back in, put the boat on the trailer, pull it up, and didn't latch the tonneau cover down. The wind took it. I come out in the morning, the tonneau cover's flipped up over the hood of the cab, and I didn't notice my rod and reel were gone, so I drove off and went to work, got home, and said, wonder what happened to my rod? And went out there, and I saw this little glint of silver in the yard. It was crushed because when that flipped over, it went sideways to the vehicle, and the one front tire crushed the reel, and the other one crushed the rod. Well, I replaced it. You know, my dime, my pocket, my mistake, you know, and you can't ask a warranty when you run it over with your car.
Right.
So, I'm out fishing with it. The wife and I are fishing, and it's a nice setup. I mean, it really is. And casts well, works good, does all that. But we were fishing this little spot, and I always take the shrimp, and I cut them into little tiny, tiny pieces. I take my fillet knife, and I put them down. I have a chopping board there, a little one. Lay the shrimp down, and I make sure I cut the head in half and all the little quarter-inch pieces of shrimp. Put them all in a little chum bat, and I sling them out towards the shoreline where I'm fishing. Now, quite often, that'll help get the redfish excited. I don't want pieces big enough to feed them, but I want pieces big enough to get them to smell it. And it brings in a lot of snapper, sheephead, and it doesn't take much, half dozen shrimp, because you're chopping them in such little tiny pieces. But key thing is cutting the head in half.
Right.
Because that's where the liver and the brains and everything else are, all the guts of the shrimp. And humans are one of the few things that eat the white meat first. Every other creature wants the
internals.
Yeah, the internal stuff, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot more vitamins, minerals, and stuff. I watch ospreys. They eat the head first,
Yeah. Get
the brain, and then they go to the guts. And then if they're really hungry, they'll eat some of the meat. But
right.
It's kind of inefficient. You know, for us, I'm doing it the opposite way. I'm not near ethnic enough to go through and eat the whole thing. I have been part of, back in the 80s, traveling to Central America, as the honored guest, you know, the fisherman guy coming in, I would go out fishing with these guys, and the honored guest got the eyeballs of the fish.
Right.
That was, and I felt very honored a couple of times with that. But getting back to the rod and reel, I'm chopping this up, so I got all the shrimp goo on my hands, right? And twice I've thrown the chum bat during the day out of the boat, had to get it back with the landing net. Well, so I'm going out of there, and I'm get the chum all up, and I go to cast my shrimp in where I toss the chum, and then that same rod and reel that I just replaced after it got crushed from my truck running over because the tonneau cover flew over into the water wet.
Well, the whole rod and reel.
I mean, line goes out, the rod and reel goes in the water, the wife tries to get it with her rod and reel, like sword fighter style, right? She's digging in the water and going to pull it up. And so she slips. She falls over on her side. The rod goes down. I'm about 3 inches away from grabbing it. And she makes another desperate reach with the tip of a rod and comes up with the line. And right where the leader and the hook is. So I grab it. And 100 and, 50-some yards later, up come the rod and reel. Well, the bail was open. I was casting it.
Right.
So I had to pull all of the line off the reel to get it back. Now, I did get it back. And 10 minutes before that, the tide was ripping so fast that I had to use my Danforth anchor, the big claw anchor. I couldn't just use my, mushroom anchor. Yeah, yeah, I couldn't use the mushroom anchor. They would just rip the boat right on, wouldn't stop it. As soon as I go putting all that line in the water, the tide stops dead. It's all in a big wad. I go to try and reel it back on. Tangled mess. Not going to happen.
Wrecked all the line.
Yeah, if the tide would have been ripping, it would have just gone right out with the tide. I could have reeled it back on. No. I'm not lucky with this combo. I actually like it, and they sell them separately. They're both about $100. It's $200 setup. Nice. It seems to work good, but I'm not having the best of luck with it.
See, there's a lot of people out there think that they have bad days out there fishing and figure, you know, you do this for a living and, you know, you have this legend about yourself. So
but
it's
I
good
teach
to,
for a living. But I don't actually get to go fishing for a living anymore.
Right, but at least it shows that you're not immortal.
Well, you know what? The only thing, you know, they say it's just like riding a bike. Well, the only way it's just like riding a bike, getting back out on the water a lot,
right,
is falling off and getting all beat up.
Right.
You know? Absolutely. Oh, yeah, I haven't been on a bike in 30 years. Crash!
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, it's been fun. I've had a ball fishing with the wife, and I got to fish with Captain Carl, and it was the day the wind just started. What was that? Was it yesterday?
No, the day before yesterday.
That was the day the wind picked up. The day before that, it was nice and calm. It was beautiful. Carl and I went out Monday or whatever it was. And Sunday, Monday?
Tuesday.
Okay. It was one of the days before this.
Yes.
Ended in a Y. I remember that. And we went out. I bet you we saw it. We probably caught 30, 40 snook. Averages around 25, 26 inches. Might have got one or two that was legal. Easy 20 plus trout and some nice ones. I mean, we literally caught trout in one spot, which is highly, highly unusual. We were in the back of Bull Bay. When you go out the back of Bull Bay, there's kind of a flat back there. And we caught, I'd say, 11, 12 inch trout all the way up to about 24 inch trout.
All mixed together.
Without moving.
That's really weird.
It was really strange. Now, not moving is a too firm of a statement. Within, I would say, 200 feet, because we started out getting the smaller trout. We moved about, I would say, 30 feet. We got some different trout. Moved 30 feet. They went back. Small trout. Moved again. They got up to mid-teens, 18, 16 inches, nice fish, and I thought we were doing pretty good. We moved again, another 30 to 50 feet, and we were into 20 to 24-inch trout.
Wow.
It was the same spot, you know, right, the same area, but literally that 20 to 30 feet change each time we did it changed the size of the trout. They went from small to a little bit larger, back to small to a little bit larger, and then into very large trout.
That's pretty impressive, though, still in that short distance travel to get into that many variety of sizes of trout.
Yeah, it was crazy. I don't really know. A lot of bait fish out there. We were fishing with white bait and other stuff, small bait. But when the guys are telling you they're catching on the beaches,
yeah,
literally when they were throwing the cast net, part of the net would land on dry sand.
Right.
I mean, when they say on the beaches, this is not an exaggeration.
I mean, literally on the beach.
Literally in 8, 10, 12 inches of water, you're standing on the sand along the Gulf of Mexico on any of the beaches. Watch out in the water. You'll see these little dark things going through the water, flash a light every once in a while. That's the bait fish, and that's greenbacks, or possibly another type of bait fish. But literally, at one point, the cast net actually landed on dry sand. That's how close they were casting.
That's pretty skinny.
Yeah, it was really different, because I've done bait off in the Gulf before, but I usually use a sabiki, and I've done it 5-6 feet of water, but I don't ever have any conscious memory. I don't think I've ever just gone up and been in the boat and literally threw at the beach right in 10 inches a foot of water.
No, that's a little strange because I'm used to fishing them off the beach and catching them in like 3 to 10 feet of water.
Yeah, and this was the first time for me to go up and literally, I mean, it was so nuts. And at one point, we got so close, the motor washed up and you could feel the motor banging on the shore and you'd take trolling motor and get us back out of there again. So it was kind of interesting. A lot of fish out there, a lot of redfish out there. Couldn't get them to eat. The only good redfish we got all day, Carl says, you want the grouper? And I'm like, nah, I got it. Kaboom, splash. Right before, he's steady there going to take a picture of me and this big redfish. He's so proud, you know, taking me fishing. And
right.
I got this big redfish. He's going to get pictures of it. And it goes in the water before we get a picture of it. So I'm going to carry my own fish grouper.
So no picture, no proof. Is that what you're
saying?
No
picture, no proof. There's no way to say I caught my slam because I had a 22-inch trout, about a 26-inch snook. Nothing special in the snook. Big trout. I mean, the trout and the snook were about the same size. and then the 26-inch redfish. But I would have a nice slam, nice flat slam. It was a lot of fun fishing with Carl. He's using those Reaper rods.
Yeah.
So,
which are an impressive rod.
Yeah, we could sit way back and cast at the shorelines, and with the wind blowing so hard, we were anchored up, power pulled up, whatever you want to call it, as far away, we would stop way out to where we couldn't, when we cast, we weren't hitting the shoreline to say, okay, we got to go another 5 feet or 8 feet, and we stayed as far away from these shorelines as we possibly could, and whether we were throwing shrimp or white bait or whatever it was, by judging the distance before we got to the shoreline was really critical. Because as soon as you got too close, the fishing stopped.
Right. Well, the water's getting clearer out there too, right?
No, yeah, the water was real clear. Now, a couple of the bays back by Catfish Creek, Whidden Creek, were muddied up. I think it was from the boat traffic.
Okay.
A lot of mullet boats running along the shorelines. You know, a guy was in the store this morning telling me, oh, there's a fish killed down by the bridge. And I said, well, was it? Man, there was dead mullet everywhere. I said, it's not a fish kill. That was fish being killed.
Right, but they were intentionally being killed.
Right. I mean, it's mullet season, run season.
Right.
And there's two basic types of mullet we have here, boy and girl mullet. Those are the two basic types.
It's pretty simple.
Pretty simple. I mean, there might be a couple of subspecies, but boys and girls are the big thing. Well, the girl mullet, the females, they have roe in them, which is fish eggs. Fish eggs, in another word, is caviar. What do the males have in them? What do the boy mullet have in them? It ain't eggs. It ain't caviar.
No.
And back years ago, all throughout the Orient and in some other countries and stuff, that the white roe or the male roe from the mullet was thought of as an aphrodisiac, much the way you would think of oysters or something like this. But it was believed to be a much more powerful thing. Well, Viagra just stopped the market on that. There's no more. So they net the mullet up, get them up there, and then once the mullet are up, they give a little squeeze. If it's orange or red, whatever, they keep it. If it's white, they'll throw it overboard. Because you can only haul so many pounds.
Right.
It's about weight in the boat.
Right.
Well, the red whale or female mullet, they could be worth, what, $2 plus a pound?
Yeah. I think right now it's still only about $1. But it'll go up real high real quickly.
Yeah, but the males are worth 5-10 cents a pound.
Yeah.
They're worth literally nothing compared to them. So they squeeze them. If the roe comes out white, they throw them overboard, live or dead. And now there is a regulation that I'm trying harder to find out exactly what it is, but there is a waste regulation.
It's called wanton waste.
Wanton waste, yes.
Wanton. It's weird how it's spelled. It's not want. It's like W-A-T-O-N.
Yeah, wanton. Like
yeah.
That means disregard for stuff, you know, wanton abuse.
Yeah.
So,
it's just total disregard for it. And the frustrating part about that, too, is like they'll say, well, the fish houses won't buy it, which is pretty much the truth. But the fish houses, if you call them, they say, oh, yeah, we buy all mullet until you decide to show up with it. And they say, we don't have any more room for that, but right. we'll take the other mullet.
Right. They say they've hit their quota on whatever.
On the white, just to save face with the general
They're
public.
They're kind of like Congress, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, okay, we're going to tell you one thing and do something else.
Right.
You know?
Politically correct, I guess.
Well, it's a way of avoiding the law. If you say you won't do something, then you're in violation of all these acts and standards. But if you just lie about it, no problem.
Yeah.
In other words, they're just like Congress.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It works. All right. Water clearing up. There is some spotty red tides around. Nothing that I would get excited about or think that anything, you know, like, oh, my God, no, it's not that kind of red tide. But there's little splotches.
Yeah, the news has a way of making everything very dramatic and lots of death and destruction out there. And,
gee, you think?
Yeah. You know, and they don't realize the profound impact it has on our local waterways. You know, it's pretty scary just because a couple of fish wash up on the beach somewhere.
And remember,
and half of them are mullet.
If you see a whole bunch of dead fish and you walk along and all you see is mullet and probably a couple of catfish, it wasn't red tide killed those fish. That was
a small percentage.
Yeah, that wasn't red tide. If there's red tide, you're going to have some mullet, some catfish, but there'll be other fish mixed in with it.
Yeah.
But when it's pretty much all mullet, you know what's happening. That's commercial fishing. All right. So to get to the point of this show is supposed to have a point. We're supposed to be getting people ready for the weekend.
Well,
I don't think
are.
The red tide's really going to get any worse or really any better. I think it's going to kind of hold.
Yeah,
hopefully it doesn't get any worse.
Yeah, from what I'm hearing from people, there's little tiny isolated patches out there. You know, guys are driving along. I've been talking to a lot of people the last several days because I don't really believe the news with 90% of what they say until I know it firsthand, especially weather. Weather and red tide, they always seem to make it really bigger than what it is. The guys are going out there driving around, and they're running into little patches that seem to be making their nose tickle or their throat tickle just a little bit, but they're in and out of it so quickly that it's not affecting them, and they're not seeing any massive fish kills in it of anything to speak of. So I wouldn't really panic about it.
Well, they say there's one spot that's really high. I'm looking at FWC's website. We've got low to moderate concentrations with one high concentration a little closer up by Englewood. But that was at 11:28, so a couple days ago, so they go out and check it again. And this stuff literally changes by the minute. I mean, by the hour, it can change. It's like if you throw dust in the water or a handful of grass clippings,
right?
And you watch it move around. That's why red tide moves.
Yeah.
People don't want to see that or admit that, but that's pretty much it. While I sit here and beat the tar out of my phone because it won't do anything that I want it to do.
Yeah, people hear about it and they think it's stuck right there in that spot. And you could go there today and it might be a little bit of a bother, but an hour later the wind shifted or the tide slowed down a little bit and it's gone.
Okay, what would you say are the top five fish in the area? I got my top five. I got my list. You can't see it. No, you can't. What's top five fish?
Inshore or offshore?
Inshore. In the harbor, in the intercoastal waterways.
Trout would probably be one of the more productive ones, mostly smaller guys. You know, the bigger ones, you caught them on your white bait and some shrimp.
Yeah.
You know, but most of the guys are catching the bigger ones on pinfish.
Next species. We'll get into specific about what we're doing later.
Oh, okay.
We got trout. Now,
trout.
You're missing four.
Pompano.
That's okay. That's two. Pompano.
I wouldn't say it's in the top five, but it's an honorable mention. It would be cobia.
Okay, so five and a half.
Snook.
Three.
Bonnethead sharks.
Four.
And that's pretty much where I'm going to stop.
Okay. Now, I'll go with you on the trout and the snook, bonnet, some pompano, a lot of snook, I probably said, but I don't remember, but Lizard fish, very prevalent right now, believe it or not.
Right.
Some Spanish mackerel, you know, in the ICW, and especially through the passes, you're going to find some Spanish mackerel. Even like in Boca Grande, or probably the best one to look for, the king mackerel coming into Boca Grande Pass.
Now, what about the bluefish? I've been hearing a few mixed reports of some bluefish out there. Did you see any or catch any?
No, I didn't see any.
I think they've been in little groups, but I've had a couple guys talk about some of the bluefish that they've been catching, just not enough to say targetable, because I don't think they're ever really targetable.
People are going to put redfish in that category right now, but I can honestly say, while standing on Carl's boat, looking into the water, couldn't get them to eat except one that I dropped, there is no doubt that from Turtle Bay by the Cape Hayes Bar, all in front of that shoreline, all the way up to Devilfish, I know that I saw unrecognizable, without a doubt, guaranteed at least 50, 60 redfish, with another 30 or 40 that I think were redfish. I mean, huge amounts of redfish out in front of there. Couldn't get them to bite. I mean, they're going around the boat, they're mudding up, and we're literally watching them swim by. It was amazing, different baits, everything. They just weren't interested in eating.
Huh.
But, you know, the snook would eat, we had no problem catching snook. I don't know why we caught 30, 50 snook. I mean, it was caught snook all day. That was no problem.
Right.
But are you seeing, now... We caught a couple of small sheephead, but saw quite a few bigger sheephead out there. I'm hearing some nice stories of sheephead up like Lemon Bay and up in the Englewood area. Haven't really got any reports of big sheephead. There's a ton of little sheephead up by I-75 right now, so they got to be around.
They're starting to, but that water temperature is still about 5 degrees above what it should be. So the better reports that I've been getting of the sheephead have been... literally the nearshore reefs, Helen's Reef, Mary's Reef, the Palm Island Ferry. Been getting some good reports at Trembley and Novak also. They're seeing them moving into the intercoastal, but most of it's been Lemon Bay area where I'm hearing the more positive reports of fish in there. But I still think it's just a little too warm for them to be up here in any good numbers. I think the ones that guys are occasionally catching in the canal or... you know, even El Jobin or whatever. I think those are just resident fish that are moving around trying to get excited and find that right temperature.
All right. Now, along the harbor, this should be the time of cobia. Neither one of us, you did an honorable mention, I think, on cobia. I'm going out with Captain Kale tomorrow, and he called me today. I've decided I'm going to go back out and get on some other people's boats. It's the first time in, 20 years I've done this?
Yeah. At least.
Get out with some other people and see what they're doing and how they're doing it and what I like and what I don't like. Like, going out with Carl, what I was impressed with was his knowledge of where we were, where the holes were, where the deeper troughs under the mangroves were. Every single thing about it, I was very impressed with that kind of stuff. So tomorrow I'm going to go out with Kale. He said we're going to go cobia fishing. He said a bunch go by. He said, but it's an early morning thing. What's your take on all that?
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreeance with that. I mean, most of it's been morning and into the early afternoon from what I've been hearing from guys. And I think it's mostly just because of the vision part of it. Some of these guys are actually running on the inside of the bar or just on top of the bar looking for those fish, and when that sun's just slightly lower to the horizon, it's easier to see into the water.
And I think the wind isn't picked up yet.
Right.
I mean, it's calm. You can actually see stuff. We were out in the Gulf. We cruised the buoys. We saw one little triple tail in the first four. It wasn't big enough to stop and fish.
You know,
10 inches or probably close to legal, but it wasn't what I was looking for. But then the wind picked up. We had to go right back in. The cobia, to me, I like fishing them. I like hunting for them. I put the boat up on an idle. I stand up, making sure you have something to hold on to. And believe it or not, sometimes all I would do is take a rope and tie it off down to one of the seats and hold on to it, you know, rodeo style, while I stood on top of my center console with my foot on the steering wheel, looking around for him, you know.
It's like being back in Wyoming, isn't it? Is it bringing back some memories for you, or what?
Well, you know, he's like, what? I'm ready. Come on, give me 8 seconds. I got it. All right. But, well, just having something to hold on to. Obviously, you got to remember to lean back on the rope. If you push on the rope, you're probably not going to hold you very well. But I enjoy that, looking for the cobia, seeing them, casting to them, getting them to eat. Now, I would say the much more effective way is to anchor up or drift for them.
Yeah, I think that's where most of the fish have been being caught, is guys anchoring or drifting, like you're saying, and it's just incidental bycatch. You know, they've got some baits out. The smarter ones are putting at least one bait out just underneath the boat right off the
trail. Well, with all the sunshine, cobia love laying in the shade.
Yeah.
And what's the biggest patch of shade out there? Your boat.
Right.
Okay. Oh, by the way, we're on WKDW Radio 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio. If you go to kdwradio.com, and you can click the Listen Now button and listen to us anywhere in the known universe, on kdwradio.com, and you might want to click that donate now button. If you think we're okay, you know, donate 50 cents or a buck. If you like us pretty good, give us $5. If you think we're just awesome and spectacular the way we really are, well, they give a lot more, buddy. Okay.
Right.
So
that's
anyway.
What keeps this radio station going. It's just a nonprofit.
You know, it's an awesome place.
Radio, and it's all about the count. And it's all about the community.
Yeah, Real Community Radio. That great phrase for this place. Let's see. Flounder. What are we talking about with flounder? I mean, every time I go out to catch flounder, the wind starts blowing 30 miles an hour. There's a solar eclipse. The Godzilla rises out of the east and wrecks another major town, so I just can't go. Or something happens.
That's usually how
it is. How is the real world doing on flounder?
It's actually okay. It's been a little slower this week than it has been, but those nearshore reefs and the passes have been where the guys have been catching the most. Especially those guys that are looking for those sheep's head and snapper have been really finding a few bigger flounder on the edges of those reefs. I just haven't heard of a whole lot inside like we had been hearing about.
Yeah, because Cape Hayes was loaded with them. There was flounder out in front of Bull Bay, Turtle Bay,
Okilia.
Devilfish had some flounder around it for a while.
Yeah.
My old stomping grounds for flounder was always just north of the phosphate dock. On the inside of Boker and Pass, you have those big old dock pilings and stuff. Just to the north, that are about 6-8 feet of water, nice sandy bottom, a little bit of grass, and the flounder used to just stack up. This time of year is when we'd go out. You could just literally limit out on flounder every day there.
Right, and see, my favorite place is literally straight across from there on the backside of Cayo Costa.
Really?
I loved fishing
over by Pelican Bay over there?
Between Quarantine Rocks and Pelican Bay.
Gotcha.
I used to love fishing that, you know, and that's where some of my best flounder days have ever been. And same thing in that 3 to 5 feet of water range.
So how does it feel to get old there, big buddy? Well, I remember back when I used to go out there.
I remember when I used to fish a lot. That's the funny part.
I'll never forget the first time we were in the store, and Robert's considerably younger than I am, but people always come in and said, asking me if, you know, Robert was my son. And, you know, Robert always kind of laugh about that. And then one day, someone came in and asked Robert, "Is that your boy?" pointing at Andrew. I'm still laughing about that.
Yep.
Yeah, one day, because you never realized that I was the young kid in the store. And then one day, remember, what did they always say about me? I thought you'd be older.
Absolutely.
For first 20, 25 years I was in there, I thought you'd be older.
Yeah.
And then one day, no, that's the old salt himself. Yeah, that guy, he looks like he's been weathered on the water.
Yep.
That's what happens when you don't wear sunblock. You go for that alligator look, you know?
Yeah. That good worn-out leather look.
Yeah. All right. See the cool stuff you get to listen to on WKDW Radio 97.5 FM out of Northport. See? You never know what you're going to hear here. All right. Sheephead, we were talking about, is... Everybody's talking about, well, oh, this is going to be a great year because we're seeing threes, fours, tens, sheephead. I'm still in the opposite camp. I think it's going to be a very medium year on sheephead, mediocre. We'll have a few great days, but it's not going to be the banner year on sheephead. And I'm in the minority on that. Everybody else is saying how great it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in agreement with you on that.
Okay.
I mean, last year wasn't that great. You know, this year is kind of following that same program again. We're
working on getting shrimp, but Eldred's... right out there before the Boca Raton Causeway does have live fiddler crabs. We're working on getting fiddler crabs at Fish and Frank's, but Eldred's has them right now if you want to go sheephead fishing.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, they've got the live fiddler crabs for bait at Eldred's. And,
don't knock it either. I mean, there's a lot of people that think that that's all they need or that's what they have to have for sheephead.
Not what you have to have, but it's good bait for sheephead.
Oh, it's great bait.
It's good bait for sheephead.
I'm not undermining
that. I don't mind sending them another bait shop.
No. And I don't mind either because they're great people down there at Eldred's. They're actually incredible people.
If you go to Eldred's, buy yourself some sheephead to fish, but take a family member with you, buy a dozen shrimp, walk out back, and throw them in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty entertaining.
That's awesome. RJ, have you ever done that, go out to Eldred's?
Oh, I certainly have. Took the daughter out there a number of times to do that, yeah.
Because Stump Pass Marina had the big snook and tarp in there, and Eldred's has got some monster snook and tarp in there. You know, you buy a dozen shrimp, you just take a minute, toss them one at a time slowly in the water, and watch the fish monster them.
It's pretty cool to watch, especially for anyone who's
And if you want to get kids hooked on fishing... You know, I mean, they've been out catching little minnows and things like that. You take them to one of the marinas and you throw a couple of, and this big swirl happens and, you know, and a 4-foot tarpon comes up and takes the shrimp, or these giant snook come and take the shrimp, and the kids are hooked.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome. Oh, we got to catch those, Papa. You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
One of my friends, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know he would actually do it. He went there and tried to fish for some of those fish. They kicked him out of the marina for a year. Made it a little rough for him, but then kicked him out of the marina for a year. He was not allowed to minimum time or until they forgot what he looked like.
Right. It takes a little bit of time.
Yeah,
to,
you're not,
or shave the beard or something
yeah,
like that.
You're not,
yeah,
he wasn't getting back in there to launch.
Yeah, no, we're not saying to catch the ones right at the marina, but that gets you excited about there's big fish that, out there, man.
Yeah, how anybody would want to do that anyway? I mean, they're pets.
Well, there's no sport to it at all.
Okay.
Might as well go with a bow and arrow, you know, and take them out that way.
Nah, no good. All right. You know, getting out on the water here has actually been pretty cool. Finding out which direction the wind is blowing and what direction the tide is blowing. 10-mile-an-hour wind here can reduce the water level by 6 inches. If it starts blowing, say, at midnight at 10 miles an hour out of the northeast, by noon the next day, it has lowered the water table, the height of the water, by up to an additional 6 inches less water.
Right.
Because the water's being blown from the northeast, southwest, pushes it down the harbor and out the passes into the Gulf of Mexico, not allowing it to come back in. Much the way if you lived up north, you're washing your driveway and you're, you know, spraying it with the garden hose and you got all this water there and you quit spraying and all the water falls down. Same basic principle. The wind keeps it out. Only the water underneath can get back in. The surface water cannot. Stacking effect in reverse. So we're going to see a lot of very, very low water. Now, one of the things that I found Tuesday and then again fishing with Terry, I'm looking for islands that have nice mangrove cover, a little bit of depth under the mangroves, but even more so out in front. Places that have a little bit of a drop-off where you're coming off from shallow areas and you get an extra 6 inches or 8 inches of water,
right,
holding a phenomenal amount of fish. In front of Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, what's making that so spectacular? You've got the sand that you can visibly see, bright white from the sun, the sand that's underwater, and then a little drop-off ledge, and then another one out there. And those fish are literally on those edges, and they seem to be going up and down. As we come along with the boat, we see fish coming at us and all this. And I think your best bet is to figure out where that is and back the boat up so you're a good cast away from it, and try and get a couple lines either with shrimp or cut bait or white bait, whatever you want to throw, up in those troughs. Now, you're going to wait a little while for a hit, but you're going to get those fish.
Yeah.
You know, as they come by in the twos, you know, one to six fish at a time is going to come through.
Right.
Is about what we were seeing on average.
Well, and you're also seeing a variety of fish, too. I mean, you've got one little group of snook comes by. 15 minutes later, a little group of pompano goes by. Another 15 minutes later, it's trout coming through.
Do lizard fish school up?
No, but they tend to be marauders.
I caught some monster lizard fish, Josh. I've caught some monster liver. I caught my lizard fish in Bull Bay fishing for redfish.
That's about the fourth one I've heard of in the last month.
I mean, it was solid 12 inches long.
Right.
Big teeth. Head like a snake, you know, just a big mouth and a body. That's all they are.
Yeah. They're fun to catch. I mean, on light tackle.
Fought good.
On light tackle, they're kind of fun, but they also make great bait.
Yeah. It's great grouper bait. Snook bait, really?
Yeah.
Cut or whole?
Whole.
Really? Live for snook?
Yeah. Well, I'd throw it out there dead, too. I wouldn't hesitate, but I prefer one live.
Yeah.
But I used to catch smaller ones, like 5-6 inches out there at Placida. And they work real good. And Mike Myers, he loves them for out there fishing.
Yeah, I've always used them for grouper bait. I've never tried them on snook.
Yeah.
So now we got to wait for Savage Lure. We weren't here live last week, but we were at the Fort Myers Boat Show. And this is the second year in a row we have been yelled at for having the Savage Lures there.
Why?
Last year, a woman came up and severely berated me and called me all kinds of horrible names because the fish in our casting tank had hooks in them.
Yeah.
The lures.
You were torturing them.
Yes, yeah. I was torturing those poor fish swimming in the tank. They were plastic fish.
Yeah,
and Ray got yelled at this year.
Yeah.
That...
I heard a lady giving him a little bit of a hard time, but I heard somebody had actually, like, really gave him a hard time.
Yeah, it's surprising that Savage Lure is so realistic when it goes through the water. This is the second year in a row people have actually berated us. I mean, the one woman was mad. I thought at first she was joking. Then to find out that, you know, there's a hook in that fish. I'm looking at her going... Well, you know, it happens sometimes, ma'am. It's, you know, fishing, a lot of hooks involved. You know, accidents could happen.
She's like,
well, aren't you going to take it out? Literally, I was telling her, you know, accidents happen. You know, just kind of playing along with the joke.
Right.
And then I figured out who I was dealing with. So I said, well, ma'am, you know, you got to let the fish calm down. You know, you have to let it get in a quiet place. You don't want to do any emotional damage to the fish. So you have to let him calm down nicely first. Well, you will get the hook out. Oh, yes, ma'am, and I promise I will do everything in my power not to hurt that plastic fish. But I didn't say plastic. I was actually being nice. But I just assured her that the fish was going to have a quality emotional experience out of it.
Right. Well, that mullet that they've designed, the way it swims through the water is absolutely...
That's actually... But the producer's looking at me going, really? And I'm like, true story, 100%. And I was actually on top of it to tell him that the fish actually was going to be in an emotional safe place. Yes.
Yeah.
You can't offer fish Play-Doh because they're underwater.
Right.
You know? Okay.
Yeah.
So, anyway... Hey,
that lure is pretty amazing.
Though. It's an awesome lure. But if you're looking in the pack, there's no way you'd ever buy it.
No.
It looks like any other lure, and it's like 12 or 13 bucks. Works good, though. Okay.
Yeah.
Lots of snook all over, and today's the big day about snook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are going to go out and give it their last, we got 8 more hours? Less than that.
Well, midnight, 6 o'clock is 6 hours, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 and a half hours?
Yeah.
You have 10 and a half hours to get your legal snook before it's closed for the next, December, January, and February is closed.
Correct. It won't open again until March 1st.
Yeah, and you do need a snook permit, which is $10.50 if you're going to keep a legal snook.
Yep.
Now, if you have a shoreline license and it's a free license, you still need to have the $10.50 snook endorsement with it. Now, who does not need a snook endorsement is a young person, 15 years old or younger. They don't need a snook permit. They don't need a license, and they don't need a snook permit.
Right.
They can actually keep a snook legal size during season without buying the permit. And a Florida resident, 65 years old, with a Florida driver's license,
yes.
Not a Georgia, not an Ohio, no on the New York, absolutely not on New Jersey, absolutely forbidden if you're in Wisconsin.
If you own a house here, you have to have the physical driver's license.
It's amazing how many people are coming up with, well, they changed the law. If you own property here, you don't have to have it. No, it's not true.
No.
You have to have a Florida driver's license.
Correct.
People confuse their toys with themselves. They think, okay, you know, I own property here. Well, I got a friend of mine from Germany. Actually, he's at the store wondering why I'm not there right now because I'm here doing the radio. But he owns several houses down here, and he's not a U.S. citizen, so he can't get the free resident Florida license because he's not a resident of America. You know, he's from Germany. So the whole property thing doesn't hold up, boys and girls.
No, it doesn't.
Because people from anywhere in the world can own property here. It's about you. The special thing is it's all about you and how special you are personally. And you and your Florida driver's license that covers you in management areas, freshwater, saltwater, hunting, turkey, everything.
You're Davy Crockett.
Yeah, you can go out and be a real Daniel Boone.
You don't need the stamps either because there's no license to technically attach it to. So you're covered all the way around.
But everybody else needs license and permits. So that's over at midnight tonight. Now, the actual truth is you can go out and fish till 11:59 as long as you hook the fish before 11:59. Actually, you have to have them in the boat by midnight.
Right.
So you need to have that fish in the boat by midnight. Then you can drive back. There's been some question on the law on that. But if you're underway at midnight, if you have a snook, that boat better be moving by 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
You cannot be sitting there with a snook in the boat after midnight. You can be coming back to the ramp. Nobody's going to... You can get away with that. But they really would like you back in the vehicle and gone by midnight. But you can get away with on your way back. You will not get away with it if they came up and it's 12:30 and you're sitting there with snook in your live well or in your ice chest. Yes, that's exactly right. He scared my little self. I didn't know what was going on. All right. Robert, what's going on out in the Gulf of Mexico for as far as you heard anything about Lane Snapper?
Lane Snapper, yeah. We were talking to that gentleman earlier. He's been doing really good. So have a lot of people for that matter. 50 feet to basically 80 feet of water has been doing really good on the Lane Snapper, up to 16 inches. I mean, there's some good size Lane Snapper out there. Some guys are running out to 100, 120 feet of water, but you don't need to run that far to get into the lanes. Literally 50 feet of water, 60 feet is kind of a good number, which is what, 12 miles out roughly?
Yeah.
You know, they've been getting the lanes. They've been getting some pretty nice porgies, a few grunts. Mangrove snappers have been good, but they're not giants. They're catching them like 12 to 14 inches, occasionally 16, 18 inches. But the lanes, the guys have been really excited about that. It's been incredible on them.
Have you? Are we getting another front this week?
I think there's a real mild one coming through in the next
couple
days.
So it'll stay at least pleasant. It's not going to get hot again for a while.
No, it's still...
What's this going to do to the crappie fishing?
I think even though it's going to be still a little warm, those fish are still going to go by that photo period and that moon phase. They just have such a hard time going against
that. Photo period, is it like crappie out there taking selfies? Oh, look at me. Boom.
Right.
Ice cream. Boom. Look at my spaghetti. Click.
They got their little fish book, too, that they
got
to post stuff
they
on.
They got fish book.
Yeah.
Fish book. Okay. All right. Oh, God, I'm sorry I asked. All right, fish book. So when the fish are underneath there taking their photosynthesis, what the heck was that?
Photo period.
Okay, their photo period. I'm not even sure I'm going to go there at all. crappie fishing, now they've got their photos for their fish book.
You just lost what? At this moment.
Okay, what are they going to eat? Actually, where are they going to eat?
I actually just stumped you.
Oh, there's so many things I want to say here at 97.5 FM, and I'm on real radio. I'm not going to say that stuff.
Right, it's a real community radio. You can't do that.
No, real community radio. With kids and everything listening.
Exactly. The full moon usually gets them to get into pre-spawn pre-spawn schools out there, so you can get.
That's okay. I'll die over here. Just keep going.
Put your hands above your head. You'll be okay.
Why? I'm not surrendering yet.
they'd be all grouped up in specific spots. So the trickiest part is finding them. So working those canals or the little lakes. Probably one of the best ways, honestly, you taught me this, is with a beetle spin or some little tiny inline spinner.
I'd go with the beetle spin right now with the way the water is. I'd be doing either white with a red dot or maybe chartreuse with a black stripe.
Yeah, that's always my favorite kind of go-to.
Yeah, I would be trying those. Silver or gold blades?
Silver.
Silver blades.
Silver's
okay,
always
I'll
been
go
more productive
you.
To me.
All right, what about bass fishing?
Shiners. Guys are just really talking a lot about the shiners. A few guys have been buying some of the plastics, but they've really, really turned on to the shiners lately. A couple guys even said they saw some bass on bed in a couple of the Northport canals.
Wow.
But I'm not sure if they were confusing them or not. I know December they will go into pre-spawn, but I'm just not 100% sure. Morris would have to reconfirm that one.
I'm not sure. The weird part about it, in Florida, the bass will start. If you live in Wisconsin, and you're in the North Woods like Wausau, Eagle River, Rhinelander, versus being down in the Dells around Chicago and stuff, you could have a week or two variant in the spawn. Right. You know what I mean? When the spawn starts versus the other one. But the whole area kind of warms up and chills off similar rates. Now the further south, northern Chicago, right around Milwaukee there, that's actually going to be quite a bit different. But for the most part, it holds about within a month. But down here, they can literally start November, December, January, February, March. You can have a four-month span of fish bedding in different times all over the state.
Right. And some of those fish will double and some of them will triple spawn.
Yeah, it's absolutely staggering to me how many. They figure one pair of bass, if you have a pond here, and between the birds and everything else, that set of bass, you can draw a 22-acre circle around that pond or that bend in the creek, and the fish will be populated out 22 acres a year out from that single central source. So a lot of
really,
fish getting
that's
moved.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, up north you rely on geese and ducks. You've got a very limited waterfowl.
Right.
But down here, how many dozens of water birds do we have? Herons and storks and ducks and geese and this and that. There's so many ways for the eggs to go one to the other, to the other, to the other.
Right.
It's really crazy how many fish will spread out. Grouper fishing. What's going on out in the grouper? I've actually, Venice, there's been small gag grouper, no legal ones that I've heard of. One legal one under Placida, under the trestle, and a couple of shorts in Captiva. I haven't heard anything about Boca yet.
I'm with you on that one. The only places I have had a couple of actual reports of legal fish have been Venice. Most of them have been small. I've heard of one legal gag. That's the first legal gag I've heard of in 3 weeks off of Gasparilla. They were out there in 48 feet of water trolling for king mackerel and picked up a nice one. That's literally the first report I've had of any besides the handful up in Venice area, but that's still scattered.
Okay, east side of the harbor, what's going on over there for this weekend?
The east side, most of the wind's been a little bit kind of north-northeasterly, so a lot of guys are still fishing over there because it is a little calmer. I don't know if this front's going to be significant enough to change that a little bit this weekend. It's mainly trout. Been some whole bunch of snook scattered over there along the bushes. I mean, all the little islands have got a lot of the little snook going on. And then the bonnet heads and pompano down there by the Pirate Harbor area have started to pick up just a little bit more.
All right. In Bull Bay and Turtle Bay, we've got a lot of redfish on the outside. Once you get up inside of Bull Bay and Turtle Bay, a lot of little snook, boys and girls. There is so many 25-inch, give or take a little bit, snook back there. Those can be caught along the shorelines. Scattered redfish around underneath the mangroves when that water's up a little bit, and a lot of trout out in the open waters. Trout, if you're looking for them, tandem rigs are doing well, or pretty much any bait under a bobber, being a shrimp, white bait, pinfish. But now you're saying up in Lemon Bay, I've heard you talk. What's going on in Lemon Bay for as far as the trout going?
That's where I'm hearing some of the better reports of the bigger ones, but the guys are all catching them on pinfish, either pitching them just by themselves and letting them swim around, or putting them under a bobber. What is it, Buck Creek? This is one of the spots, the mouth of Buck Creek. They've been getting some nice trout there. And then, I can't remember the name of the other one. I think it's Knights.
I think Knight up there. Yeah, it's possible.
I'm not
sure. Hey, I had radiation treatments in my brain. I have an excuse. Old age, radiation treatments, diabetes, you know. I don't have to remember anything.
Right.
Oh, my name's Steve.
Nice. I do 90% of my fishing from shore up in Inglewood, so, I mean, it's kind of, I hit the same couple spots most of the time, so.
I get to meet the exact same new people every day.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fun, making new friends all the time.
Right.
As we go along out here, there is a lot of fish to be had off this weekend. Now, you think it's going to be better in the harbor or in the Gulf this weekend?
Honestly, it depends on what this wind's going to do. If this wind's going to stay nice and calm, I would be heading offshore personally just because of the variety of stuff that's happening out there.
King mackerel, cobia.
Spanish mackerel. There's been triple tail out there. I've had a couple of oddball reports of some blackfin tuna that guys have been catching while trolling for those king mackerel. Plus, you got all the snappers and the grunts and the sheep's head. You know, it's just, there's a lot of good food fish and just fighting fish out there.
So are you going to go trolling or bottom fishing while you're out there?
I'm going to probably troll for quite a while. And as it starts to slow down, then I'm going to maybe consider getting into going after the bottom fish and maybe even trying to relocate some new areas. You know, that would be the main reason why I'd troll, because so much changed out there on the bottom from the storm. I want to try to learn some of the new habitat that's been covered up or some of the habitat that's been exposed.
And it's actually pretty amazing how everything's going to go on out there in the Gulf. Now, I think I would be up in the harbor. The low tides have been hitting around the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. So what I would be doing is fishing outside the bar. Excuse me. I'd be working on the outside of the bar, front of Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, outside of Jug Creek area. If I was up in Lemon Bay, I'd be working along the edges of the ICW. If the boat traffic's reasonably light where I could fish that drop-off, there's a lot of nice fish along those drop-off edges when the boat traffic isn't up. If the boat traffic's up a little bit, I'm going to fall back to the mouths of some of the canals. Ski Alley and the docks along north of Ski Alley, pretty good. I'm going to go out around Gasparilla Island on the inside by the phosphate dock. We're seeing some nice fish there underneath the phosphate docks. Saw a lot of people fishing on the islands and flats around Devilfish. Didn't see anybody doing great, but right. A lot of people pretty intent on what they were doing, so I'm going to assume they were not, you know, being totally ludicrous and just sunbathing for the day. With Carl and I, we would literally pull up and we would fish probably 20, 30 minutes in a spot and then go on to the next one. And sometimes, I mean, one spot we were at, we were in a beautiful little passageway between two islands with a bay, and we were catching some fairly decent snook, 25-inch in the average, just fun little guys, you know, nothing spectacular. But it was such a picturesque spot. It was absolutely gorgeous. And Carl says, okay, let's go to the next spot. We didn't get nothing here. And I'm like, okay. It was a little like, wow, this is exactly nobody around couldn't see or hear anybody else anywhere. And that was my style of fishing.
Yeah, that's a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, it was, I would have liked to have a little lighter tackle. That's the one thing. I'm putting on his boat four of those Conflict 2 combos.
Right.
Carl's been doing a lot of the Akuma stuff. Now, speaking of Penn stuff, you can come into Fish and Frank's now till after the holiday. Amazon price match on any Penn reel or Akuma reel. We will match Amazon's price when you come in the door. Not what you see at home, but what it is when you walk in the door. And we'll be doing that until after the holidays. Fish and Frank's has a bait shop in Port Charlotte, Florida. We have a bait shop in North Fort Myers. Maybe someday soon here could come, yeah, possibly Northport or Englewood. I think Englewood first, maybe. But you never know. We could be anywhere, anytime. You never know when I'm going to get another crazy thought and open another store.
Well, on fishandfranks.com is probably one of the best places to look up any information for fishing in the area. Yep.
Fishandfranks.com is F-I-S-H-I-N, no G in Southern Fishing, by the way, F-R-N-K-S.com. The whole website's put there for you. It is not, anyway. I guess we're getting ready to wrap it up here. This is WKDW Radio 97.5 FM, and this is Fish and Frank's, and I'm Fish and Frank, and you're not. Who are you?
Robert.
You're Robert?
Yeah.
It's nice to meet you again. I've been looking forward to meeting you. I've heard about you.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, well, I guess we'll see you on the next radio broadcast show.
Okay, you're clear.
Yeah, just going to crank it up to get my attention. I'm very hard of hearing.